Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on Channel Q. It's great to be with you on this short week, but a lot going on,
yes, to say the least. But aren't you happy we're back doing it live? Because like we were gone all last week. I feel like this has kind of like been the perfect week to come back on. And there's still so much happening. So much to talk about.
To say the least. I mean, let's talk about the shocking interview with Donald Trump that came out. We're going to be getting into that. Many are saying this could be worse than the Nixon tapes. Plus, stay tuned for the skinny on the skinny stimulus bill being pitched by Republicans.
Did you come up with that? You crafted that?
Just saying. Also, we want to give a shout out to our listeners in San Francisco on 1550 AM or Alice 97.3 FM HD2. I mean, the pictures coming out of the Bay Area, they woke up today with an orange sky and clouds from the wildfires. It was sad. It was creepy. Like, it looked like the apocalypse, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not even just the Bay Area, but I know like there was some photos coming out as well just across the country of like places that are also on fire. I don't know if it was Salem. I think it was Salem, and the skies were like actually red. I mean, it is so scary. I can't even imagine waking up, looking outside my window or taking my dog out for a walk and seeing an orange or red sky. Are you kidding me? It's apocalyptic. Mm-hmm.
For real. So we want to send our love and just best wishes. We're thinking about you, and please stay safe. Now let's get into some what's trending this hour. President Trump reacted to the interview with journalist Bob Woodward that was released today, where he talked about playing down the dangers of COVID-19 to reduce panic.
Well, I think if you said in order to reduce panic, perhaps that's so. The fact is, I'm a cheerleader for this country. I love our country. And I don't want people to be frightened. I don't want to create panic, as you say. And certainly, I'm not going to drive this country or the world into a frenzy. We want to show confidence. We want to show strength. We want to show strength as a nation.
Now, he spoke about that at a press conference today. And yeah, didn't really say that he didn't do that. Like he's pretty much going right into the storm there.
Well, guess what? You can't really lie and say, even though that will happen, there will be moments where there will be some fake news allegations. But guess what? He's clear on tape saying that he downplayed it. And even then, he's trying to kind of paint this picture that makes it seem like he's this calm, cool, collective guy who had it taken care of. I'm sorry. 190,000 people in this country have died. There's no way you were calm, cool, collective, and there's no way that you handled it. You played it down, and we're going to talk about it more, but I can't believe it. It's wild. Impeach him again.
This was the only option, right? That was his way of being a leader. Now, after months of calling on lawmakers to provide a plan for indoor dining in New York City, because of course, and I'm wondering this, like winter is coming up, right? Like what are the East Coast cities going to do? But restaurant owners finally got good news today from Governor Andrew Cuomo, who announced they could welcome diners back inside at the end of the month. Restaurants will be allowed to operate at 25% capacity beginning September 30th, but they must adhere to strict restrictions. Also, there will be no bar service. You know, New York known for their bars. How many of us have had a good night out in New York?
Oh, for sure I have.
Tables must be 6 feet apart, and at least one diner in each party must leave contact information for possible tracing purposes. The Department of Justice intervened on Tuesday in a lawsuit filed against President Donald Trump by journalist E. Jean Carroll. They're trying to move the case from New York State to federal court and replace Trump's legal team with the full force and resources basically the public's money of the DOJ. Now, Carol sued Trump for defamation last November after she accused him of sexually assaulting her in a New York City department store in 1995 or 96. And Trump said she was lying and described her as, quote, not my type. That was so much trending this hour, but now let's move into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
All right, we call that the tea report here, those pop culture moments that are trending all across the interwebs. Now, let's start off with basically this one is going to be some television, movie, film news, right? Regina King, I love her. She won her Oscar. I mean, Watchmen. She's been in so many incredible just pieces of entertainment. Well, she is making history at the Venice Film Festival as the first Black female director. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's 2020 and she is killing this. So she basically decided to try her hand behind the camera for the first time with her directorial debut, One Night in Miami, which is the first film directed by a Black woman to be selected to premiere at the Venice Film Festival in its 88-year-long history. Now, let me be clear. She has directed episodes of television, but this is her first time stepping behind the camera for film. So, wow, congrats to her. She's absolutely incredible. And this news is actually coming on the heels of the Oscars. So, the Oscars, they just announced a new representation and inclusion standards for eligibility in the Best Picture category. And, you know, some people, it's just not sitting very well with, including actress Christy Alley, who railed against the initiative, calling Hollywood so far left. Now, I feel like over this past week that we've been off, I found out that she was a Trump supporter, and I was shocked. Just shocked.
It seems like that from these comments.
Well, here's what she had to say. She said, this is a disgrace to artists everywhere. Can you imagine telling Picasso what he had to be in his effing paintings? You people have lost your mind. Control artists, control individual thought. Oscars or well, she tweeted that on Tuesday. And honestly, I can't believe it. She's really doing a whole bunch because this is supposed to be a great thing. But that is your pop culture highlights and tea report moments of the day.
Okay, now coming up, it turns out Trump, as we mentioned, knew the true threat of COVID-19 way back in February. We have that clip next in 2 minutes. Legendary journalist Bob Woodward has a new book out called Rage. And in it, he says President Donald Trump admitted he knew weeks before the first confirmed U.S. coronavirus death that the virus was dangerous, airborne, highly contagious, and, quote, more deadly than ever, or than even your strenuous flus, and that he repeatedly played it down publicly. And here's this audio clip that's being shared everywhere, that conversation between Woodward and Trump, where he discussed this on March 19th, 2020.
Give me a moment of talking to somebody, going through this with Fauci or somebody who kind of, it caused a pivot in your mind, because it's clear just from what's in on the public record that you went through a pivot on this to, oh my God, the gravity is almost inexplicable and unexplainable.
Well, I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you.
Sure, I want you to.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
Back with us is Fox News commentator Richard Fowler. Thank you so much for being here.
Good to be with you both. How are you?
You know, another day in paradise.
Indeed it is.
This is just wild. And I think, and me and Ryan have been talking about this, like you're talking to the most legendary and known journalist for even breaking Watergate. And just to be so bold in sharing this information is quite surprising.
It is. And you know, every president does a Bob Woodward book, right? Every president does one of these books. But you always know that Bob is going to get the story. And he, indeed, in this particular time, he got the story, and he got it, as Donald Trump would say, bigly. Because what you're going to hear Republicans say is, oh, well, Fauci said the same thing in February. Well, let's think about that. That clip that we just heard, that clip was March 17th, when Donald Trump knew how bad it was going to be. Now, if you guys remember anything about March 17th, around March 18th or 19th, that's when states all across the country started to put in place their stay-at-home orders. So the president knew this was going to be bad. He knew it was five times worse than the flu, but he denied that the coronavirus was bad and or that the coronavirus was spreading 32 individual separate times. The one I remember the most is one where he said that everybody would be back in church by Easter Sunday. And that's not what happened.
So one thing I think is so interesting is, you know, Trump has, I guess I would describe it as an Achilles heel, right? Where I feel like he cares so desperately about how people think of him. And I think he's working so hard to create this legacy, right? And I think he thought allowing Bob Woodward in and just kind of putting it all out there would be a positive thing. Was he even thinking about the repercussions of saying, yeah, I have been playing it down?
Well, I don't think the president thinks about these things, because this is a president who is obsessed with being right and obsessed with people liking him. So he probably gave Bob Woodward exactly what he needed so Bob would like him and Bob would be nice to him and Bob would treat him fairly. And what Bob did was he released the audio tapes where the president has specifically said that this is 5 times worse than the flu. It spreads like an aerosol. And I want to say the word he uses is wildfire, right? So think about that for just a second. Now ask yourself the question: did you hear the president say any of these things from the briefing podium?
No, he played it down.
When talking to the American people, so you're telling a journalist what you know to be true on these days, and you're going to the American people, and you're not giving them the unadulterated truth so they could prepare themselves. And the question I say is: if we had known, if the president had said wear a mask, if the president had enforced the ideal of having a nationwide mask policy, a lot less Americans would be dead today.
Yeah. And Senator Chuck Schumer actually also reacted to the news and I think had the same feelings that you have.
Cannot believe he deceived the American people the way he did. How many people would still be alive today if he just told Americans the truth? He had an obligation to tell them the truth.
And I believe in hearing this, a lot of people are feeling this way. But again, we see this leaked audio and we're talking to Richard Fowler, Fox News contributor. Richard, we see all this stuff, even books coming out. Will it make a difference, though, to sway the undecided voters or even the people who vote for Trump?
My prayer is that it will. But the reality is that Trump's base of supporters are hardened. And you're going to hear Donald Trump, and you're going to hear Kayleigh McEnany, and you're going to hear the Trump team in the next couple of days tell you that Bob Woodward is fake news. Because every story that's negative about Donald Trump, even if it's based in fact, even if they have multiple sources, even if they have the president on tape saying it, is always the same, oh, that didn't happen, oh, that's fake. And so now it's prudent upon the American voter to get educated. And if you're an educated American voter, it's prudent upon you to talk to your friends, your relatives, your associates, and your neighbors about what you know to be fact and why this election, especially for the millennial generation, is probably one of the most important elections of our lifetime. This will determine what direction will America go in. Will we be a nation that is about truth and about equity and about justice? Or will we be a nation that's about untruths, lies, and an ever-widening gap between the have and the have-nots?
Let us not forget that this is only a snippet, right? He met with him. Trump talked to Woodward 18 times from December to July of this year.
Wow.
So there's going to be way more probably damaging stuff that's going to come out, and I honestly cannot wait.
Yep. All right. Stay right with us here, because after this, we're talking about Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and how he's revealed a new coronavirus relief bill yesterday. But did they just cut out stimulus checks? What's going on? Find out next in 2 minutes. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell unveiled a slimmed down coronavirus relief bill on Tuesday and announced plans to move to a vote later this week, which seems to now put Democrats on the defense.
Senate Republicans appear dead set on another bill, which doesn't come close to addressing the problems in our country. Republicans are going to cut their original inadequate $1 trillion skinny bill in half, maybe more, and put it up for a vote this week. Of course, it had no input, zero input from Democrats, completely partisan, in a chamber where you need bipartisanship to get anything done.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has called it pathetic. So what does it include and who will it really help? Back with us is Fox News contributor Richard Fowler. Well, Richard, why is this bill being referred to as skinny?
Well, it's skinny because it is. It's absolutely skinny. What this bill has done is stripped out many of the protections and many of the things that kept the American economy going. When coronavirus, sort of when the pandemic just sort of ensued in this country, we lost over 30% of our GDP. These stimulus packages have been an attempt to mitigate those losses and really help uplift the American people. Stripped out of the bill is the $600 unemployment money that would go to the 29 million Americans that are receiving some sort of unemployment benefit from the government. Mm-hmm. Also stripped out of it is the stimulus checks that was going to American families to help them buy food, help them pay rent, help them pay their utility bills. And let's be very clear, evictions in this country are on the rise. All across this country, there are evictions happening because a good chunk of the American people cannot afford their rent because 29 million of them aren't working.
Which is why I think this is so frustrating on both sides, to be honest. I feel like we have been trying to figure out, and they have been trying to figure out how to get another package or, you know, care package out to everyone at this point. And it feels like it's just these little things. And not to diminish what the Democrats are trying to fight for, because they're very important, but it does feel like, when are they just going to settle on something? Because like you just mentioned, millions of Americans are actually at a point where they desperately need help.
Look, here's the truth. The truth of the matter is that is why Congress is the most unpopular branch of government. While you like your own local congressperson, you don't like the entire entity of Congress, because everybody is hardened in this sort of us versus them dichotomy. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the American people are suffering.
Again, we're talking to Fox News contributor Richard Fowler about this new coronavirus relief bill that has hit the Senate. It's slimmed down. Democrats are not happy. You kind of broke down a bit of what we're seeing, but can you give us some more details?
Sure. So some things that are missing out of this bill is the $1,200 stimulus money that would go to every American who makes under a certain threshold of money. Also missing from it is the extension of unemployment benefits to the 29 million Americans who receive some sort of government assistance when it comes to unemployment. They have a limited amount of money for paycheck protection. And let's be very clear. I think it's the Oxford Business Index. They did a study recently that said by the end of this year, we will probably lose 4 million American small businesses. And when I say small businesses, more specific. Like, I'm talking about your local Chinese food restaurant. I'm talking about your local mechanic shop, the local bakery in your neighborhood, all places that could go under, which sort of, if you think about the last segment, really angers the American people. And it should, because you had a president who didn't tell us the truth. You have a Congress who is playing politics. And while this is all happening, the American people are suffering, with 29 million of them being unemployed.
So I guess what will happen, because they're going to present this, and obviously Democrats aren't happy. So where will we land? Will there be a negotiation?
All the signals from the White House indicate that there will be a stimulus deal between now and the election. We're going to have to wait to see. Pelosi's been very hardened in her positions. So we're just going to have to wait and see what this looks like. This is going to be a waiting game.
What about rent and eviction?
Now, that is something that is of concern to the Democratic Party. Republicans haven't had much movement on that. But all across this country, there are millions of folks who couldn't pay their rent this week, right? Who couldn't pay their mortgage. And it's having a real impact not only on them, but on their landlords, too. Because if you're not getting your rent, the landlord can't make their mortgage either. So it's really a domino effect. And I do believe that Congress has to act swiftly, or we could possibly see parts of our real estate and our real estate market go belly up.
Oh, that is scary. All right. Well, Richard Fowler, thanks again for being with us for this.
Good to be with you both.
Find him on Instagram at Richard A. Fowler, and also on Fox News. Now, coming up, U.S. President Trump was just nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Surprised? We were too. More details on how it all happened next in 2 minutes. Big news today is President Donald Trump has been nominated for the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize.
I mean, what more could we ask for, in all honesty?
And he was nominated by a far-right Norwegian official for helping to negotiate peace between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. So this is causing a lot of controversy today, because many people think that he doesn't deserve this.
Oh, of course not, because guess what? Peace is in the name. And I think Trump has really ran away from any type of word or any, you know, description of, like, I don't think we could even describe him as peaceful at all. He's actually quite chaotic, if you really think
about
it.
Well, maybe he hasn't created a war internationally, but what do you say about the war he's created at home? I mean, right here in this country, we're in the middle of a civil war. We're on the edge of it.
But it's not even just, I don't even think it's about like almost like creating a war here, because that's what obviously he's doing. I mean, we are in the civil war, as you mentioned. But I think it's also the idea of him kind of, you know, partnering up and buddying up with like these dictators throughout the world, right? And these evil people who a lot of people would consider being like, wow, this is awful. It's just it's quite strange to wake up one morning and see that Trump has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize.
We're living in the upside down like Stranger Things. Well, here is Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany responding to this today.
Hello, everyone. Today, President Trump was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in recognition of his work in brokering an Israel-United Arab Emirates peace deal. It was a historic deal and the first such deal in over two decades. This is a hard-earned and well-deserved honor for this president. President Trump's foreign policy will always be one of peace through strength, and that is what the American people are seeing abroad.
So again, this person who nominated him, he's from the Progress Party. He's a far right person. He, of course, said that, you know, he's not a big Trump supporter, but he said the committee should look at the facts and judge him on the facts, not the way he behaves sometimes.
I hate it when people try to act like they like to try to cherry pick what they want to like take from him, right? They want to take certain things that fits in their viewpoints, that fits in the what they agree with versus looking at the bigger picture. I'm sorry, that is privilege in itself when you have the audacity just to be able to cherry pick the little things that don't affect you, but you can look like, "Oh, well, let's give him a break. He deserves this award." That's just wild to me.
I mean, he said that people who have received the Peace Prize in recent years have done much less than Donald Trump. I kind of want to go back and talk about, you know, the people that have won it the past few years.
Well, I mean, just last September, Trump is most definitely, he like railed against the Norwegian Nobel Committee, which, I mean, is actually responsible for selecting the Peace Prize winner. So I really doubt that he is going to even win this thing. And we were having this discussion about like, oh, well, he can say that he is, you know, Nobel Peace Prize nominated. But I don't know if people are really saying that. And also, maybe he can put it on the back of his book once he like writes a book at the end of this thing. But like, who cares? Does this mean the credibility has been lost from the Nobel Peace Prize? Because honestly,
I mean, this is the thing. He's nominated, so he hasn't won necessarily. Previous winners have included Martin Luther King, someone like Mother Teresa, Barack Obama in 2009.
So
these are people that, you know, you look back and you say, wow, this is what they actually represented and brought to the world. And he'd be going up this year against New Zealand's Jacinda Ardern, who's amazing, by the way. She's been praised for her response to the coronavirus outbreak. She's a prime minister over there. He's also going against the World Health Organization. How ironic is that?
Wait, and Greta Thunberg. A whole organization can be nominated?
Yeah, organizations and individuals.
Oh, gosh. Wow, it's intense.
So there you have it. That's some news coming out today. More that you would never have imagined.
I mean, every single day there's something new.
All right. Let us know what you think. Do you think he should be getting nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize? You can always hit us up on social media at LDT Show. Now coming up, the queen of the gym, Jillian Michaels, is urging people to stay away. That's next in our What's Trending This Hour. You know, during the break, Ryan, I was on Instagram story and I noticed Yessi Ortiz, of course, from 97.1 Amp Radio, our sister station, posted that her partner, I believe, was using a recycling box as a stand for his laptop. And it made me laugh because I feel like we each, unless you're like, and you know, I know the OCD people out there or the people that are like always have the setup, you know, went on Amazon.
The super fancy setup too.
The standing table, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the rest of us get creative, right? And so I think we each have our own setup, and mine right now is like a gift box of some sort, like a polka dot gift box that I found. And I remember when I was at a hotel yesterday recording because I got stuck, after Labor Day weekend. I think I was using a drawer that I pulled out of the hotel, of one of the drawers.
Are you kidding me?
As a stand for my laptop.
Wow. I mean, mine's not too bad. It's like several, my laptop's sitting on like several old boxes, but my mic though is sitting on an old candle that I have been meaning to throw away, a journal, and my AirPod case, like my AirPod original box.
How are you even
case.
Having that stand on each other?
It's the box that it came in originally.
Well, we want to see your weird setup. If you have one, take a picture, post it on social media, tag us at LGT Show, and we'll give you a shout out. And of course, like and comment on your picture.
I mean, the weirder, the better.
Exactly. All right, let's get into some what's trending this hour, though. Joe Biden spoke today in Warren, Michigan, and called out Trump for downplaying COVID-19.
While on the day that we hit 190,000 dead in the United States because of COVID-19, we just learned from the Washington Post columnist Bob Woodward that the president of the United States has admitted on tape in February he knew about COVID-19 that had passed through the air. He knew how deadly it was. It was much more deadly than the flu. He knew and purposely played it down.
I mean, I think this is the ammo the campaign was looking for, that's for sure.
You know, that's not even, here's the thing. I am loving the passion from Joe Biden. And it's not even the, when Trump said that the veterans were losers, he called them that, like about the military, we covered that. Yeah. The passion behind Joe Biden is just incredible. And I love that he is talking about this and showing us and showing the American people what a real leader is, because right now Trump is screwed. And I'm happy Joe Biden is taking full advantage of this moment to show people what we should be standing up for.
Yep. 190,000. It's crazy. Now, Aaron Coleman, the teenage Democrat, we actually talked about this story as well. He won a Kansas State House primary after admitting to blackmailing a girl for nude photographs in middle school and bullying others, has now admitted to recently abusing his ex-girlfriend. Okay.
Gosh, he said, that's the worst.
Yeah, while it is true I was abusive to my ex-girlfriend, I do not agree with the characterization being made about our experience in the hot tub the day after Christmas. This is so strange.
That's what you're worried about?
I did not choke her. I also don't think she is intentionally lying. As I know, large quantities of alcohol could be affecting both of our memories. Well, that's a guy I trust. Okay.
Creepy.
So that is somewhat churning this hour. Let's move into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
All right, let's get into the tea report, those pop culture stories that are trending right now. And oh my God, I cannot believe I have not talked about this yet. But Niecy Nash, over our break, honey, she got married, like remarried to a woman. She came out.
Oh, so she wasn't in, she had been in previous she relationships.
Was, I mean, then. Literally, she just divorced her husband at the beginning of quarantine, and now she's remarried to a woman named Jessica Betts. And of course, in this week issue of People, Niecy Nash, you know, if you know her from Claws, she's a newlywed. She's 50. She's sharing these intimate details of her love story and the most recent surprise wedding with her wife, Jessica Betts. She said this. She said, "My marriage was has absolutely nothing to do with gender. It has everything to do with her soul." She said that Jessica Betts is the most beautiful soul I have ever met in my life. And she said, "I was not suppressing my sexuality my whole life," because obviously that news came to such a shock to fans. I mean, for me, I thought it was her talking about a role that she was playing. She says, "I love who I love. At one point in my life, I married twice and I love those people. And today I love this person. I've done everything I wanted to do on my own terms and in my own way. So my choice now is, and a partner has nothing to do with who I've always been. It's a matter of who I am in this moment." And I love her. They look so, so happy. And honestly,
yeah, they're very cute.
It's what the kids call a cultural reset, honey. Now, let's move on in the tea report here. You know, Jillian Michaels has always been someone, if you are familiar with the fitness world or The Biggest Loser, she's always been someone who's put her foot in her mouth, especially when it comes in terms of talking about Lizzo. We talked about it here. Well, she has revealed recently that she contracted the coronavirus earlier this summer as she is warning people to not go to public gym.
To get a superior workout. If you are afraid of COVID, you should not go to the gym. And I actually am a person who let my guard down. I haven't even spoken about this publicly, really. And a very close friend of mine gave me COVID several weeks ago. I'm fortunate to have gone into it being healthy, and I was able to get on the other side of it pretty quick. But not everybody is that lucky, as we know. And all I can tell you is, if you are afraid of getting COVID, a public gym is probably a place where you will get it. And
I'm not shocked. That's the thing about going out to these public gyms. You have to be safe, and letting your guard down is something that can happen.
Yeah, listen, I'm working out and staying active. I'm not going in a gym. It's that simple. Right. You don't need to go somewhere that's one inside and around people where you're touching all the same, like the same thing, basically.
Exactly. And honey, that is your tea report of the pop culture moments that are trending right now.
And I'm happy she said something. That's a responsibility she has. Now coming up, we tell you about the controversial video TikTok is trying to take down, but users keep re-uploading it. That's coming up in 2 minutes. A video of a 33-year-old Mississippi man who was a veteran taking his own life. It was originally live streamed on Facebook, has gone viral on TikTok, with children as young as 13 being exposed to the shocking footage. You know, TikTok has said they went out of their way to block the spread of the footage and ban those who upload it, but then users are finding workarounds to continue to share the video. So what damage does seeing a video like this cause for its viewers, especially children? Back with us is Dr. Alfie, and of course, go check out our podcast, Couched in Color. We always love having her on. Thanks for being here.
Of course, my pleasure.
I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen this happen. And because of that, you would think these platforms would have figured it out. What's going on?
I think some of it is there's always going to be the shock of this realization that mental illness is a thing that's sort of active and living and breathing, and it's always with us. And so I think for a lot of these companies, there's this idea that, you know, it happened once. That's a once in a lifetime thing, because when we think about suicide in general, it has something that we call a low base rate, which means not a lot of people do it. But like I always say, one person is too many. When one person dies by suicide, that's one person too many for their families and their loved ones and the people who care about them. So I do think there's this idea that, oh, that's not going to happen again. We don't necessarily need to prepare for it. That permeates a lot of these companies, and that permeates social media, which is unfortunately just not accurate. It's not true.
Thing is, with Facebook, specifically, you know, Facebook is a place where they have been in trouble for, one, not telling, well, keeping things up that weren't facts, especially when it comes to politics. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, this is something that has surrounded this platform, especially even when, you know, the Russians were hacking in for the 2016 elections. Like, there's been so much there that at this point, it feels like mental health is at the bottom of the totem pole. And it's unfortunate because it feels like we're talking about it so much, but it still doesn't seem like, oh, people are understanding, like, this could happen at any moment.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I was on a call earlier, this huge conference call, and someone was asking about, I was talking about millennials and Gen Z and how much more prevalent the conversation of mental health and mental illness is these days. And I said, the one thing that I would say is, while it is reducing stigma, there's this odd thing that's happening at the same time where people are still able to talk about it publicly, outwardly, but a lot of us don't apply that conversation to ourselves, right? So people are running around with therapy is dope tote bags, and therapy is cool t-shirts and all that kind of thing. And they can spout what they see online and what they see on television related to mental health and mental illness, but there's still this difficulty applying it to ourselves. And I think the same thing is true for some of these organizations. I don't think they know what to do.
You know, that's super interesting, really quick, because I wanted to say, because I even had to kind of work through that as well, in the sense of, I was, and I'm going to be quite transparent, I was diagnosed with severe anxiety by my therapist, right? And as soon as she told me it, I kind of went into my old way of thinking, being like, are you kidding me? You could have said that I've been dealing with it all my life, but diagnosing me was just awful. And so even then, I think that showed me that I even have things to work through. Sorry to interrupt.
We all do, like, and thank you for sharing and for your vulnerability in sharing that, Ryan. I appreciate it. And we all do.
It's the truth. We all do.
And Dr. Alfie, again, is with us as we talk about how Facebook is refusing to take down a live streamed suicide, and now it's all over TikTok. They're trying to handle it. But this brings up the issue or the idea of trauma porn, and we're seeing it with everything, not just with this. It doesn't need to be a suicide. Murder is everywhere. How are we supposed to deal with that as a society, let alone having kids have access to this?
It's interesting. I had the opportunity to be interviewed by this sister named Molly Longman about a week and a half ago. And this was the center of the conversation. And you have two camps. One camp is, well, if we don't show this stuff, we don't show the graphic violence, then people won't know that, you know, certain populations are like bearing the burden Black folks, let's be honest, the disproportionate burden of these murders and that type of thing. Then there's the other camp that I'm in, which is like, no, you can tell people that this stuff is graphic and bad without putting right. that stuff on loop. I don't need to see what happened to our brother Jacob Blake to know how horrible it was. All you need to do is say he was shot in the back, the kids were in the car, and he was right at the car. That's enough. I don't need anything else. And so I think that it is this tension between how do we push for change if we don't show people how bad this is. By the same token, part of the reason the whole thing with George Floyd exploded, beyond the fact that it was horrendous and horrible and never should have happened and was preventable, is because people actually saw it in real time, right? Mm. However, after it was out of real time, we didn't need to keep seeing it to know how awful it was. So my thing is that I think that there has to be a reckoning for all of us where we say that Black bodies and brown bodies and queer bodies, right, and other bodies are so important and we value them so much that we don't need to engage in this trauma pornography, as you put it. I think that's a great way to describe it, to feel compassion, to feel energized, to go towards change, to get out there in the streets and fight. All you really need to do is describe for me what happened and I'm ready, like fist in the air, you know, give me a mask and let me get outside and fight for it. So we've got to do better as a society of acknowledging the pain that we continue to cause when we put this stuff on loop, because it's not right.
And give yourself a break if you're feeling like you're a victim to trauma porn, right? If you're seeing it in your feeds, step away. All right, Dr. Alfie, thank you so much again for being here with us. We love having you on.
Always, my pleasure. I love y'all.
Again, check out her podcast, Couched in Color. And of course, she's on Instagram. She posts great stuff. Dr. Alfie with two E's. Now coming up, the dictionary just got an update, how they choose the words for their annual update and the new words just for the LGBTQ plus community in 2 minutes. The dictionary just got a huge update. You know, they do this every year, it feels like, or every quarter. They announce that they have new words. And I'm always interested in how they figure this out. Like, why they decide to choose these words? Do they have a committee? What's the process? Can I join this committee?
Oh, God, no. Have you heard you speak lately?
Yes, that should be. Is that a word in the dictionary? Anyway, This year, they're making some changes, including capitalizing Black and updating LGBTQIA language.
Yeah, they actually added a lot of amazing inclusive language and words. And I'm interested in knowing that about that decision. So yeah, let's get right into it.
Yeah, here to help us break that down, how they decide to do this every year, is Senior Research Editor for Dictionary.com, John Kelly. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Shira, you mentioned that you wished you could be a part of the committee that deals with these updates. In so many ways, you are, because how you use language, how the LGBTQIA community uses language.
She's not even a part of that community. Let's be quite honest.
They just hired me.
She's only here because we like her.
Proxy. You're LGBTQIA adjacent. Well, how we all use language does determine the kinds of updates that we make. So you're a part of that.
No, I appreciate that. So are you looking at social media? Are you looking at, the news articles? Like, how do you actually determine what gets added to the dictionary?
We look at everything. We definitely look at social media. We look at news articles. We look at style recommendations from influential organizations like GLAAD. We also look at updates in important associations like the APA, the American Psychological Association. And in this round of updates, we touched over 80 entries affecting LGBTQIA words. Now, many of these words were new entries, per se, you know, a new word added to the dictionary. And that includes ace, as short for asexual. It includes trans plus. It includes Filipinx, Afro-Latinx as gender neutral options. But some of the most important work we did this round is a little bit subtler, but it's very important. It's about eliminating heterosexual bias in our dictionary definitions. Mm. So let me walk you through this here.
Yeah.
Historically, let's take a word like homosexual and homosexuality. Decades ago, homosexual and homosexuality were used in clinical ways. And dictionaries want to be scientific and unbiased. But over time, we have realized, forgive me, there's a thunderstorm.
Wow,
must be some wisdom from God there. But over the clinical uses of homosexual and homosexuality became very problematic because they were used in ways that are now associated with pathology, disease, mental illness, criminality. And so a word like homosexual and homosexuality now implies in definitions that being gay is not a normal way of being, that it's sick, diseased, or wrong. And so we look at recommendations from the gay community, the LGBT, the broader LGBTQIA community, and style guidelines, and gay is the preferred term. And our dictionary definitions, how we refer to that, now reflect what's better.
This is really fascinating. Again, we're talking to senior research editor for dictionary.com, John Kelly, who just switched over to his phone because there is a storm where he's at, but he's continuing to chat with us.
Now, how are dictionaries making sure that these definitions reflect the societal changes and context of those words? Because I know there's been a lot of discourse, even about the word racism and how it should be defined.
Now, that's a great question. And in fact, racism is another word that our lexicographers are reviewing to ensure that our definition reflects how racism went from basically slurs to systemic oppression. In short, time and care and a lot of research. They look at audio, they look at style guides that I referenced before, and they make sure that the dictionary definitions are reflecting the terms as they're being used in the community. One of our lexicographers will call college campuses, for instance, in her work on Latinx. She called the campuses to see how are people pronouncing it, who's using it. And she found interesting things like the pronunciation Latinx as opposed to just Latinx and Latinx. So everything is fair game because everything we do around these topics has a linguistic, has a lexical aspect. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of data now more than ever.
Yeah, it's so important because it's what we all use to really determine how we want to converse with each other. And I think it's also an entryway for a lot of other people who aren't in these communities to understand why it's important to use this language. John, as we wrap things up, any other words you want to mention, give honorable mentions to that got added this year?
I definitely want to call out capital P pride as an LGBTQ pride.
Yes.
We gave it its own separate entry with a capital P, which breaks from dictionary tradition, but it deserved its own separate entry as a part of lowercase p pride. So that's something to definitely be proud of.
Oh, love it. Well, thank you so much again for being here with us. And be careful out there.
Yeah,
we know it's thunderstorms out there.
We made it work. Thanks
yes, we did. That was Senior Research Editor for Dictionary.com, John Kelly, actually in Austin, Texas, and where there are storms right now. Now coming up, LA just put the nail in the coffin for trick-or-treaters. We'll tell you what Halloween could look like this year in 2 minutes. Halloween is right around the corner, and you might be wondering, how are we all going to celebrate Halloween this year during a pandemic? I've been thinking about it, and I'm not a child, but I was looking forward to celebrating.
Halloween is your favorite holiday out of the year. I do know that for certain. But to me, it doesn't really matter. I've never been a big person when it comes to Halloween. I never went trick-or-treating. I honestly do not care, but I know a lot of people like yourself really do.
I know that's part of your childhood you'll never get back. And I'm sure you've talked about that in therapy, Ryan.
No, well, I haven't. Yes, maybe.
LA County has officially canceled Halloween events. They said trick-or-treating, haunted houses, Halloween parades. Well, you can't do it. They won't be allowed because it can be very difficult to maintain proper social distancing on porches and at front doors. That's according to health officials. So imagine like your child waking up and hearing this news today. Like the horror, the sadness. I mean, already they can't go to school. They can't see their friends. And now Halloween.
Well, I do wonder, though, and actually, as you brought this up, we saw people who were potentially parents, they were like protesting just because they couldn't get a haircut or they couldn't go to the nail salon. I wonder, is there going to be a huge uproar when it comes to like this announcement, especially if it happens in different parts of the country? Right now, we're just reporting about Los Angeles County, but if it happened across the country, I wonder if, you know, no shade, white parents are going to be so upset that they start protesting and then they just break the rules regardless. And in their neighborhoods, they still kind of do the trick or treating thing. Like, how are they going to stop this?
Well, this is the thing. High density areas, like big cities, I think like New York, where people are on top of each other and you can't control things. I'm sure there will be rules and regulations. I think in smaller towns and like in smaller neighborhoods, people are going to just do their own thing because they're in kind of their own pods, right?
But I think a lot of the concerns, and you mentioned this off of air, was like, well, how are people going to make sure the candy's okay? But for me, I feel like you should be thinking about that all the time, every Halloween, pandemic or not. That's just how my mom did it. She would inspect the candy just coming from school because I wasn't going to no stranger's house asking trick or treat. Are you crazy? Not when there's glass shreds and knives and all that stuff hidden in the stuff. No, thank you.
That's like, that's not real. I mean, it happens once in a while. But
you can't say that's not real. I think it hasn't happened to me.
No, yes, it happens. You get to be cautious and careful. And I was wondering if people do go trick-or-treating, you're going to have to sanitize all the candy,
yes,
right? And like you can't control what the kids do. So listen, I think that there needs to be some solutions. We can't take Halloween away. This year has already been devastating enough for kids and even us adults. I want to celebrate Halloween too. And I already know, Ryan, I'm going to be wearing an outfit. I'm going to be decorating my home. I'm going to be doing pumpkin carvings and I'm going to be watching Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Let me guess what your Halloween costume is going to be. Like a Karen or something, like a Halloween something. Karen.
A slutty Karen.
A slutty Karen. A slutty Karen demanding for Halloween change.
Demanding the Halloween not go away. All right. Well, hopefully you will be celebrating a very safe Halloween and you can figure out something and get creative. But coming up, airlines are starting to ban people for calling employees mask Nazis. Boy, what's going on? That's next in What's Trending This Hour. We're back and we've got some more show for you, including how to vote and make sure your ballot isn't rejected, because there is a lot of misinformation out there right now, a lot of controversy around voting, and we want to make sure that your vote counts.
Girl, and speaking of controversy, if y'all missed us discussing the Bob Woodward and Trump clip that has been so damaging and all over the internet, of Trump basically admitting that he knew about COVID and the true threat of it back in February, we're discussing that with our very own Richard A. Fowler. So stick around if you missed it, because honey, we got you covered.
Well, we've got some other news happening right now. What's trending this hour? Today, President Donald Trump released a new short list of potential Supreme Court nominees who have longstanding anti-LGBT ideologies.
Again? Really? Okay.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Stuart Kyle Duncan of Louisiana, judge on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, Stephen Engel of the District of Columbia, Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice.
And we'll be talking more about that on tomorrow's show.
We sure are. We need to, because that's breaking news and it's so unfortunate. It just feels like minorities and are just constantly fighting for their lives in this country. It's so sad.
Yep, and Congress is going to launch an investigation into sexual assault, disappearances, deaths, and the leadership's response at Fort Hood. This story is crazy. It just keeps getting crazier. I didn't even realize this, Ryan. 28 soldiers stationed at the U.S. Army base in Texas died this year. We keep talking about these disappearances and everything. According to data from Fort Hood officials, the 28 deaths include 5 homicides,
wow,
as well as accidents, suicides, deaths related to illness, cases still under investigation, and 1 combat-related death. So a lot of questions there.
I mean, it sounds like a horror film, to be quite honest, but this is real. This is real incidents that are taking place, and the fact that they're just now investigating, I hope we get somewhere with this, because it's sad.
Yep. Now, a woman called an American Airlines flight attendant a mask Nazi.
Oh,
it's like an episode of Seinfeld, after she was asked to properly wear her face mask. And now this woman is being banned from the airline for life.
I hope it was worth it, sis. I hope it was worth it.
American Airlines banned the passenger after she handed the note. This is how it went down to the flight attendant while deplaning. She was, of course, really angry at the flight attendant asking her to wear her face mask over her nose. Because once again, it doesn't work when you wear it under the nose. That's not the point of the mask. I keep seeing people doing that. By the way, when I was stopping at a gas station yesterday, the woman didn't have a mask on. She was like making a sandwich for someone.
With no mask?
And it was at a gas station, yeah.
Oh, well, first of all, who's getting a sandwich at a gas station? That's gross.
Now, let's get back to the story. The note read, and this is just, it was somewhat entertaining, so we're going to read it. It said, "You are nothing but a glorified maid who needs to jump down of her high off her high horse and learn how to speak to people. Nobody cares about your stupid seat policies or your nose issues. We pay your salary and your attitude is unnecessary." Well, ma'am, your attitude is unnecessary, and learn how to talk to people.
My thing is, it's so simple. If you don't want to wear a mask or follow the rules, then just don't put yourself into the situation. Yeah. She could have, if she did not want to wear her mask, she could have just drove wherever she needed to. I mean, my thing is, it's just so annoying and unfortunate that you come in and you disrupt everyone else. And then you, now you're harassing and possibly spitting on a woman that you're now calling a mask Nazi. It's ridiculous.
I mean, if you want to be part of society, then be a good part of society. You know what I mean? Like, and don't fight things that people are trying to do to keep each other safe.
Yep.
That was so much trending this hour. Now let's move into some top stories in pop culture news. What's going on, Ryan?
Okay, so the T Report. Here are some pop culture moments that are trending right now. Oh my God. Crazy news just came out about Amy Schumer. She revealed today that she has Lyme disease, noting that she's maybe had it for years. She took to Instagram sharing a throwback photo of herself before asking her 10.1 million followers for their advice on how to cope. She said, "My first ever fishing pole. Anyone got Lyme this summer?" She said, "I've had it maybe for years. Any advice?" And the CDC also lists the medication under Lyme disease treatments for adults. So that's some scary news. I just can't imagine. Oh my God, Lyme disease. Did she get bit by a tick? That's just wild.
That's how it happens. A lot of people on the East Coast have been getting it. If you go hiking or you're in forests. It is scary.
Last time I heard about Lyme disease was when Justin Bieber talked about he had it.
Yeah, and it really impacts your body. It can be really bad. So sending her a lot of love.
We sure are. And we're going to move on in the T Report with Lily Allen and David Harbour. Now, they got married in Las Vegas in a ceremony shortly after obtaining their marriage license on Sunday. So they've been popping up in and out of the news. The couple basically shared pictures of their small reception following the low-key event, which took place at Graceland Chapel. Now, here is something that they basically said. So this whole thing included an Elvis Presley impersonator, which, of course, how very Vegas of them. They said, "In a wedding officiated by the king himself, the people's princess wed her devoted, low-born, but kind credit card holder in a beautiful ceremony lit by the ashen skies courtesy of a burning state miles away in the midst of a global pandemic." And that was what David captioned his photo. And he said, "Refreshments were served at a small reception following," and he added basically of their In-N-Out burgers and fries. So that was their reception meal. And
wow, they're cute. I mean, he's 45 years old. How old is she?
I don't know, honestly. I feel like maybe
he's the guy from Stranger Things. He looks very different in these photos.
Yes. He's hot. And so that's your pop culture moment that is trending right now, honey.
Love is in the air. Okay, coming up with ballots and voting laws top of mind, we're telling you how to keep your ballot from getting rejected. And if you should really follow Trump's advice to vote twice, that's next in 10 minutes. Many Americans want to make sure their vote is counted this upcoming election. And we've heard different things from different people, including President Trump, who told us last week to vote twice.
So let them send it in and let them go vote. And if their system's as good as they say it is, then obviously they won't be able to vote.
Well, joining us to give voting tips experts recommend so your vote does count is Matt Wild, Director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. First off, should people be voting twice?
No, don't do that. That would be a bad idea.
Why would Trump say this then?
Yeah, I think what he was saying was, if the system is as good as advocates like me say, you won't be able to do that. And he's right in that sense. You won't be able to. So if you've sent back your absentee ballot and you go to the polls on election day, those poll workers are going to give you a provisional ballot. They're not going to give you a regular ballot that goes into the machine. And so there is security there, and you will be forced into that other option, not getting a regular ballot.
Well, there's just so much scandal, though, happening, obviously, with the USPS system and mail-in balloting. It feels like a lot of people and a lot of voters, what if they're feeling like maybe I shouldn't be participating in mail-in ballots? Is that something that they should be actually doing?
I do think there is a lot of misinformation out there, and it certainly is very concerning for voters, especially voters who are accessing absentee ballots for the first time. What I'll say is, absentee voting is a safe option for voters. You just have to know what the deadlines are in your state, and you have to be realistic about how long it takes any piece of mail to go through the mail process. You know, I think that if you're going to be voting by mail, and you request that ballot early, and you send it back in early, you shouldn't have a problem. If you're waiting to mail it back until the day or two before Election Day, it's unlikely to get there in time. And so I do think that the voters themselves have to realize that if it's a little late in the process, if it's getting very close to Election Day, a lot of states have other options for returning those absentee ballots, and they should avail themselves of those, including ballot drop boxes. You can usually return it to an elections office. And in some states, you can actually return that absentee ballot to a polling place on Election Day.
When you say early, though, like, what does that actually mean?
Well, so right now, ballots are in the mail in North Carolina. So we are started. The election is here. You know, most states are going to be mailing out those ballots 30 to 45 days in advance. And so by the end of September, most states are going to have their absentee ballots in the mail. And so you can start returning those pretty quickly.
All right. Matt Weil again is with us, director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, as we talk about five things to do to keep your ballot from rejection. We do not want that this election season.
So let's get into this list of five things, because I think the first thing that's very important is people knowing their status. How can they do that?
Sure. So, I mean, every state's rules about elections are different for everything, for voting in person, for voting early, for voting absentee. But we are going to start hitting very soon some of the registration deadlines. So by federal law, the earliest registration deadline is about 29 days before Election Day, which puts you early October. So by then, you are going to start seeing some states where it is going to be too late to register to change your registration. So I certainly encourage voters right now to be checking their status. And most states allow you to do that online. 41 states have online voter registration portals where you can register, but those portals also allow you to check your status to see if you're already registered. If you don't have that option in your state, you should be calling your local election official. Easiest way to do that in most states is to Google your county's name and election official, and it'll get you to the right spot.
What were the surprising ones? Because there is one here about signatures, which is obvious, but people might not think about it.
So, like I said earlier, absentee ballots are a safe option. In 2016, about 1% of the ballots that were returned were rejected. So not a huge number. But of the ones that were rejected, about half of those were to a signature issue. Either the signature wasn't on the ballot at all, or the person's signature didn't match what was on file. That's a long-known problem. We know that, you know, your signature changes over time. If you registered to vote 15 years ago, you might not be signing the same things, way. And so that is an issue. This is not the time to get creative on your signature. You should be using the one that you normally use for the most official things you do, because that's probably what you signed on your registration form.
When we're looking at the upcoming election and what you do at the Bipartisan Policy Center, how are you looking at voter suppression and how this all influences that?
Certainly the misinformation, I think, is the biggest risk right now for voters. Voters need to know the most accurate information. BPC, the Bipartisan Policy Center, is a partner with the National Association of Secretaries of State Trusted Info 2020 campaign. We want voters to go to the best sources of information. Usually that's your state and local election official. You know, organizations like mine also try to direct people. The Bipartisan Policy Center is also working with Facebook on their Voting Information Center to try to get facts into the bloodstream online. We know that's a tall order. We do think that, you know, when voters have information, they can certainly make the best decisions for themselves.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us for this today. It's very important, as we all know.
Thank you for having me.
Again, that was Matt Weil, director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Now, coming up, legendary journalist Bob Woodward spoke to President Trump. The audio clips revealed that Trump knew how devastating COVID-19 could be in March, but downplayed it. The clip and more reactions from this revelation next. Many Americans want to make sure their vote is counted this upcoming election, and we've heard different things from different people, including President Trump, who told us last week to vote twice.
So let them send it in and let them go vote. And if their system's as good as they say it is, then obviously they won't be able to vote.
Well, joining us to give voting tips experts recommend so your vote does count is Matt Weil, director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. First off, should people be voting twice?
No, don't do that. That would be a bad idea.
Why would Trump say this then?
Yeah, I think what he was saying was, if the system is as good as advocates like me say, you won't be able to do that. And he's right in that sense. You won't be able to. So if you've sent back your absentee ballot and you go to the polls on election day, those poll workers are going to give you a provisional ballot. They're not going to give you a regular ballot that goes into the machine. And so there is security there, and you will be forced into that other option, not getting a regular ballot.
Well, there's just so much scandal, though, happening, obviously, with the USPS system and mail-in balloting. It feels like a lot of people and a lot of voters, what if they're feeling like maybe I shouldn't be participating in mail-in ballots? Is that something that they should be actually doing?
I do think there is a lot of misinformation out there, and it certainly is very concerning for voters, especially voters who are accessing absentee ballots for the first time. What I'll say is absentee voting is a safe option for voters. You just have to know what the deadlines are in your state, and you have to be realistic about how long it takes any piece of mail to go through the mail process. You know, I think that if you're going to be voting by mail and you request that ballot early and you send it back in early, you shouldn't have a problem. If you're waiting to mail it back until the day or two before election day, it's unlikely to get there in time. And so I do think that the voters themselves have to realize that if it's a little late in the process, if it's getting very close to election day, a lot of states have other options for returning those absentee ballots, and they should avail themselves of those, including ballot drop boxes. You can usually return it to an elections office. And in some states, you can actually return that absentee ballot to a polling place on election day.
When you say early, though, like, what does that actually mean?
Well, so right now, ballots are in the mail in North Carolina. So we are started. The election is here. You know, most states are going to be mailing out those ballots 30 to 45 days in advance. And so by the end of September, most states are going to have their absentee ballots in the mail. And so you can start returning those pretty quickly.
All right. Matt Weil again is with us, director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, as we talk about five things to do to keep your ballot from rejection. We do not want that this election season.
So let's get into this list of five things, because I think the first thing that's very important is people knowing their status. How can they do that?
Sure. So, I mean, every state's rules about elections are different for everything, for voting in person, for voting early, for voting absentee. But we are going to start hitting very soon some of the registration deadlines. So by federal law, the earliest registration deadline is about 29 days before election day, which puts you early October. So by then, you are going to start seeing some states where it is going to be too late to register or to change your registration. So I certainly encourage voters right now to be checking their status. And most states allow you to do that online. 41 states have online voter registration portals where you can register, but those portals also allow you to check your status to see if you're already registered. If you don't have that option in your state, you should be calling your local election official. Easiest way to do that in most states is to Google your county's name and election official, and it'll get you to the right spot.
What were the surprising ones? Because there is one here about signatures, which is obvious, but people might not think about it.
So, like I said earlier, absentee ballots are a safe option. In 2016, about 1% of the ballots that were returned were rejected. So not a huge number. But of the ones that were rejected, about half of those were to a signature issue. Either the signature wasn't on the ballot at all, or the person's signature didn't match what was on file. That's a long known problem. We know that, you know, your signature changes over time. If you registered to vote 15 years ago, you might not be signing the same things way. And so that is an issue. This is not the time to get creative on your signature. You should be using the one that you normally use for the most official things you do, because that's probably what you signed on your registration form.
When we're looking at the upcoming election and what you do at the Bipartisan Policy Center, how are you looking at voter suppression and how this all influences that?
Certainly the misinformation, I think, is the biggest risk right now for voters. The voters need to know the most accurate information. BPC, the Bipartisan Policy Center, is a partner with the National Association of Secretaries of State Trusted Info 2020 campaign. We want voters to go to the best sources of information. Usually that's your state and local election official. You know, organizations like mine also try to direct people. The Bipartisan Policy Center is also working with Facebook on their Voting Information Center to try to get facts into the bloodstream online. We know that's a tall order. We do think that, you know, when voters have information, they can certainly make the best decisions for themselves.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us for this today. It's very important, as we all know.
Thank you for having me.
Again, that was Matt Wild, director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Now coming up, a choir teacher's Hamilton-inspired message reminding students they will be back in school soon enough. That is next in our Yaz Queen of the Day. We're back, and it's time to get into our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen.
We've got a little Hamilton for you. You know, every day is a good day when it includes Hamilton.
Oh, yes, for sure. You know, I recently just got rid of my Disney Plus, and I forgot that I got rid of it, and I was trying to go watch Hamilton and was like, nope, not today. And so I need to like re-get it again so I can watch it.
Just for that, oh, you're one of those. Yeah, I got it and I need to cancel it right now. But anyway, let's get into this though. Billy Ray Poley, a choir teacher at Burlington High School in Vermont, welcomed the students back and sung about how school will be different to the tune of Hamilton's You'll Be Back.
Remember that we can still make music during this time. Now you're making me mad. Remember, despite arrangements, I'm your man. You'll be here.
No, I just love this. I was singing along to it, even though I didn't know the words.
You don't even know the words.
You'll be back. You will blah, blah, blah. COVID rises, COVID falls. All right. It's very catchy, actually. And here he is talking about how videos like this will actually make students more comfortable about returning back to school when it happens.
One of the assistant principals was like, hey, we need to remind the kids that it's going to be great. And we have to like make them feel comfortable and welcome in coming back. And so if you have videos and fun things that we can send them to just remind them that, you know, we're here.
Now, where were my cool teachers way back then?
I'm sorry, maybe you just didn't have any gay teachers, because the gays will always make it more fun and interesting. But yeah, to be honest, I can imagine. I was a choir kid. I was a theater kid growing up, and I could not imagine going back to school and not being able to kind of do that, you know, really. Or singing with the mask on. Like, yeah, he had to come up with something creative. I don't know their gender, but they had to come up with something that was creative and would make the students excited to come back to their classes. And I thought that was the perfect way of doing it. And of course, everyone has been watching Hamilton since they have the accessibility to it now.
Yeah, I want this to be retweeted by Hamilton and then him to make like an appearance at the next musical of their.
We did get it from Good Morning America, so I'm pretty sure he probably saw it.
There will be some sort of surprise. We know them and their surprises. All right, that does it for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And we always love to hear from you. You can nominate someone for our Yaz Queen of the Day. Just slide into our DMs at LGT Show.
It's super simple.
Yep. Now coming up tomorrow, how to donate to causes you're passionate about on a tight budget. Something I think about, actually. Plus, why catching up on sleep doesn't work. Also something very relevant to me, but I'm sure if it's relevant to me, it's relevant to everyone. These are like really important things. Do you sleep a lot? Do you get a lot of sleep?
Oh, actually, speaking of, I had terrible sleep today and I was tossing and turning all throughout it. Oh my God, it was awful. But for the most part, I normally do, but not recently.
You see, a lot of people are having sleep issues and then you think you can just like catch up on the weekend, but it actually might not help you. So we're getting into that tomorrow, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. And again, we post all these shows as a podcast. If you miss anything, just go to the radio.com app, search Let's Go There and subscribe so you're notified when we post new episodes. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
All right. Bye, y'all.